This summer has been a much better summer for lawns than last summer, but if your lawn can still use some work, now is the time. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Turfgrass specialist Nick Christians, professor of horticulture at Iowa State University, will be here. We'll talk about what makes this an ideal time to work on your lawn and how to overseed or start from scratch. Horticulturist Richard Giron of Iowa State University Extension will also be here, and he and Nick will answer your questions about the plants in your life. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we're going to start the hour off with lawn care. Horticulturist Richard Giron of Iowa State University Extension will join us in a few minutes to answer your questions. But first, horticulture professor at Iowa State University and turfgrass specialist Nick Christians is here. Hello, Nick.
Hi, Charity. How are you doing?
Good. Welcome back to the show. And this is an ideal time of year to work on your lawn. What makes this time of year so perfect for lawn care?
Yes, if people ask me when is the best time to do your seeding, to begin fertilizing, you know, just about anything you can think of, I normally pick the 15th of August as the start date for that. The reason for that with seeding are the weeds that come into spring seeding. If you've ever tried to spring seed, you know that what you end up with is a weedy mess of crabgrass, goosegrass, foxtail, everything you can think of, and you can't hardly see the grass. So spring seeding generally doesn't work very well. If you seed at this time of year, it doesn't look like it. You know, the mind tells you that this isn't the right time, but getting it in about the middle of August will be just at the beginning of the right time when the grass that you're trying to grow will flourish and the weeds will not.
And do we know why that works out so perfectly?
Most of the weeds we're fighting are warm season summer annuals. They thrive in high temperatures and they germinate in the spring and die in the fall. So things like crabgrass, they're going to germinate every spring about the 1st of May here. And if you seed at that time, that's just they're what's going to come up. They then die off in the fall. If we can seed now our cool season grasses like the bluegrass, the fescue, the rye, and things like that, they do just fine at this time of year and the weeds don't.
All right. So let's say you have a lot of weeds in your lawn and things have gotten a little out of control this summer. You want to overseed your lawn. What do you need to do to get started?
Well, you need some good seed, first of all. There is a lot of bad seed on the market. I can go into any store, even the best ones, and find stuff that I would refer to as junk and you should never use it. And right beside it is good seed, and the good seed is going to cost more. Your best bet is to go to a good garden store or something like this, or at least a store where you have people that know grasses, they know the business, and ask them for good quality seed. That's the starting point.
All right, and when you ask for good quality seed, how do you know you're getting what you want?
Well, it's a hard question to answer. Good quality seed is usually going to be more expensive and poor quality seed is going to be cheap, but that may not always be the case. One thing that I look out for is annual ryegrass. Unless I'm going to grow a temporary turf, I'm going to stay away from annual ryegrass. It's cheap, it comes up quick, but it's a mess later. You want the best quality seed you can get. That's generally going to be Kentucky bluegrass here where we're at here in central Iowa, maybe tall fescue in some parts of the state. But you want to get the best quality of those that you can. A good bluegrass perennial ryegrass mix works well, too, but not annual ryegrass.
All right. And what about if you have a shady lawn?
Shady lawn, that's going to be the fine fescues, and there are a number of good shade lawn mixes out there. There's also some cheap, not good shade lawn mixes. So you want to go with the best quality you can get. It's going to cost you a little bit more money, but in the grand scheme of things, it's a minor cost. If your seed costs you $10 more, I always tell people this when they're establishing a new lawn, you've probably got $1,500, $2,000 in the grading. and you're going to save $10 on seed. That doesn't make any sense. Buy the better quality seed.
All right. And if you are overseeding a lawn, once you get your seed, then what do you do?
That's going to depend on how big the areas are and that sort of thing. It can be as simple as a garden rake where you've got some dead spots. You come in and rake it up a little bit. Seed soil contact is the key thing. You can't just lay it on top because if it does germinate, it's just going to die up there. You got to get the seed in contact with the soil. For larger areas, there are pieces of equipment that you can rent. There are slicer seeders where they slice vertically down into through the grass into the soil and then drop the seed down into the slits. Those are very effective for bigger areas. If you've got a big area, you're probably best off tilling it, raking it, and starting new.
All right. And then once you get the grass seed there, what do you have to do to make sure it's going to grow in ideal conditions?
At that point in time, once you got it down, it's watered. Usually we get pretty good cooperation from rainfall. Now it's very dry going into the middle of August. Hopefully we'll get some rain coming out. If we don't, getting water to it's going to be critical. There are also starter fertilizers. They call them starters for new seeding, and they're going to be high in phosphorus. That's the key element at the time of seeding.
How often do you need to water? Are you talking about every day, every other day?
Initially, you want to keep the surface moist, particularly if it gets a little hot, and it can in the middle of August. If the seedling germinates and you get a hot, windy day, it can dry it up and kill it. So you don't want that to happen initially. You want to keep it lightly moist, maybe two or three times light watering during the day until it sets a root. Once the root's down there, you can start cutting back to maybe once a day or once every two or three days.
So two or three times a day.
Two or three times a day, light watering. You can probably get by with one. You can also mulch, putting some straw on top of it, or there's various mulches you can buy. A mulch is anything that holds moisture in, and let's say you're gone during the day and you can't do that. I would mulch the area, and you should be able to get by with that with a single watering, a watering in the morning, a watering when you come home at night.
All right. Now, let's talk about starting a lawn from scratch, which in some ways is an ideal condition, isn't it? To get to start.
Yes, it is. And that, again, is all timing. You can have the most ideal seed bed in the world, and if you seed it in the middle of May, you're going to come up with a mess. And by the way, if you've done that, I know I get a lot of calls on this. I'm talking to a lot of people out there who did that this spring. We had a wet spring, and they seeded, and everything came up good, and it turned to weeds. If that happened to you, the grass is, if you started with a good grass seed, that grass is still underneath all those weeds. So don't give up. The weeds will turn brown pretty soon in September. Give it some fertilizer, and then the key thing in the spring is to give it a pre-emergence herbicide about the middle of April. You want to get that down before the annual weeds germinate, and you can turn a lawn like that around. It takes a long time. It'll take a year or more, but you can do that.
Now, if money is not a big obstacle, do you recommend starting from seed or do you recommend starting from sod?
Well, that's it. If money is no concern, definitely sod. Sod's the greatest thing in the world. You put it down, you've got an instant lawn. You've got to do a little watering to get that in, but sod's the way to go. But that most of us aren't in that
right.
boat. I've got an acre of lawn, and when I put that in, I sodded around the house, and then I did the difference. I did some figuring on it, but the difference was like $200 to seed and $4,500 to sod. So it's much more expensive on big areas like that. There you would want to seed, and I did seed.
Did you have any trouble making the lawn that you seeded look like the lawn that you sodded?
It took me a couple years, but I did not. This was a case where we finished construction in the spring, and I sodded some areas just to keep the mud down around the house, and then I knew that I'd be wasting my time with the spring seeding, so I just kept the weeds down by mowing until August. I hit it with Roundup to kill the weeds, and I seeded right in the middle, about the 15th of August, and that worked very well.
We always have a lot of questions on this program about alternative grasses. Everybody wants the silver bullet, the grass that looks like a nice lawn, but you don't have to mow, or at least not as often. Are there grasses being developed?
There's no silver bullet. That I don't think that will ever happen, and I've been doing research on that for years and years because that is a big issue. I've worked with buffalo grass, and I've worked with others. There's no perfect solution. I think Kentucky bluegrass is still our best species year in and year out, and that's not perfect. You got to water it. It goes into dormancy if you don't. But Kentucky bluegrass, to me, is still the best species for this region.
I was talking to a friend who has family who live in Florida, and they moved to Florida from Iowa. And now, of course, they're watering and caring for a lawn that's mostly crabgrass, and they're happy to have it. Is there a different standard for Iowa lawns than there is for lawns in the other parts of the country?
Oh, yeah, and particularly Florida. Completely different. The species are completely different. They grow warm season grasses. I mentioned that word earlier. We have warm season weeds like crabgrass. Well, their grasses like Bermuda grass, Zoysia grass, St. Augustine grass, those are warm season species that flourish in hot weather. And you fertilize them at different times. You mow them at different heights. Pretty much if you move down to Florida, things are going to completely change on you as far as timing is concerned and things like that. We have a problem, too, with people moving up from the south here, and they grew up with Bermuda grass. They try to manage a Kentucky bluegrass like a Bermuda lawn, and they end up with a mess.
All right. I'm talking with Nick Christians. He is a professor of horticulture at Iowa State University and a turf grass specialist. We've been talking about lawn care because this is an ideal time to do some really in-depth work on your lawn. You can join our conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Standards changing in Iowa at all? There are a lot of people who are talking about using fewer chemicals on their lawns and maybe preferring a more natural look. Do you think that there's a cultural shift underway?
There, to some degree, actually that's been going on since about 1988 and probably peaked out in the 90s. It might be going a little bit the other way now. A lot of talk about it, and it's a good thing. You know, I agree with that, reducing chemicals and so on. But what you generally find is they're not satisfied with the results, and then they want to know how to go back and get rid of the weeds and that sort of thing. So
there's a backlash.
It runs in cycles.
All right. Well, we're going to take a short break here. We'll be back in just a moment. Again, my guest is Nick Christians. He is a professor of horticulture at Iowa State University and a turf grass specialist. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will join us in just a few minutes, and he and Nick will answer your questions about your lawn, about your garden, about your landscaping. Give us a call, 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Nick Christians, horticulture professor at Iowa State University. We've been talking about lawn care so far. Horticulturist Richard Giron is also here from Iowa State University Extension. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
And, of course, you can ask your questions at 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'll start with a lawn question. This one's from Jim. He says, I have about a 3-acre field overrun with weeds, a few animals on it, and I'd like to eliminate the weeds and get grass growing. How would I go about doing that?
Well, the good news is he's at the right time. Does he say where he's from in the
state?
No,
he didn't mention.
Okay. But it's going to be pretty much the same. It varies a little bit from far north to far south. But he's at the right time, which is the good news. If he really wants to do it right, he's going to have a lot of volunteer perennial weeds like brome grass and quack grass and things like that in it. That's where Roundup comes in handy, which glyphosate, which is a non-selective weed control. You can go in and kill things like that that have a rhizome system. It'll translocate down and kill the rhizome. So he should do that first. He should wait a few days, and he's still got a few days before the key time. Till it, level it off. That's a big area, so he's probably going to have to do that with equipment, but get the proper grades in it, and then seed, and he's hit the perfect time of year for it.
All right. Next, let's go to the phone. Stanley is on the line from West Union. Hi, Stanley.
Hi. The question I have is I got picnic bugs or vinegar bugs, and they're kind of having their way with my sweet corn. What can I use on them?
Okay. Well, they typically might damage possibly the silks at the end of the ear.
Right.
I don't consider that to be major damage. I would probably just harvest that and cut off the end.
They're getting underneath the leaves.
Okay. So if they're causing more damage than that, then I guess I would check with our entomologist and see what he would suggest.
Okay.
And his name is Donald Lewis.
Okay.
His phone number here at Iowa State is 515-294-1101.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Good luck, Stanley. Thanks a lot for your call. Next, let's go to Bob in Cedar Falls. Hi, Bob.
Hi. My question, I have something popping up all over my lawn. I know it is stink grass. I know there are other names that goes by, more technical names, but it has a really very bad smell, and it spreads very rapidly. It's got long shoots that go out. Wondering if there's any way of controlling that other than Roundup, any that would kill everything. Anything known to take care of that?
There's various common names that are given to different species, and I'm not sure exactly which one that is. You could send me a picture of it. In fact, I spent part of the morning looking at pictures of weeds that people sent me. If you can get a good picture of it, two or three different shots, close-ups, and so on, you can send it to nchris, nchris, at iastate.edu. And that's Ia State.
Yeah. Okay.
And then edu, like education. Oh, that was an N, not an M. And Nick
M.
Christian's N, as in Nick, chris.
Okay. And... it's instead of a single blade like most glass, it's got a blade that comes up and then it shoots other little blades off the side of it, and it's got long runners that go out from, or not, you know, a foot or two long runners that go out, and it has a real distinctive odor when you crush it. It's very nasty smell.
And it's a grass. You don't have kind of a rounded leaf on it, do you?
No, it's not. It's a grass. Well, it's got blades like regular glass. Matter of fact, when it first comes up, you don't even realize that it's not regular grass, and then it starts putting out these longer stems with side shoots on them.
Yeah,
and,
that one's not ringing any bells. And Richard has got a blank look here too, so I don't think either one of us know that one.
That's pretty common, though.
All right, Bob. Good luck with that. Thanks a lot for your call. Here's one for you, Richard. This is from Cynthia in Anamosa. Which vegetables can be planted for a fall crop in Iowa? What's the best time for each, and are there any special care and feeding instructions?
Well, right now you could plant things like beets and carrots. Early September, things like lettuce and spinach. So a number of things, radishes also. So right now, basically things like beets and carrots, early September, lettuce, spinach, and radishes.
All right. And let's go back to the phones. Next, we've got John in Osage. Hi, John.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a question about a newly seeded area around a patio project. I seeded it about right after the 4th of July. I have a pretty good stand of grass. My question is, should I let it go to seed or should I mow it when it's tall enough?
The simple answer to that is mow it as soon as it's tall enough. Don't let it go to seed. But my main question is going to be, what kind of seed did you put down in there?
Well, it's mostly a Kentucky bluegrass, but it's a combination. They have a blend here at our elevator called an Osage blend that others have developed over time. So it's pretty good. It's a pretty good stand.
If it's perennial ryegrass and not annual ryegrass, you'll be fine. Even with annual ryegrass, you could mow it off and it'll go away. But the simple answer to your question is mow it like you would regular grass. If you're going to mow it, say, 3 inches, let it get up to about four to 4.5 inches and mow it down and keep it mowed regularly. Don't let it get up so high it's going to seed.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, John. Next up, let's go to John in Davenport. Hi, John.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Mr. Jerome was nice enough to tell me how to take care of my orchid cactus, and they're beginning to sprout. But my question is about the darn African violet. It was my grandmother's favorite flower, and so I'm trying to raise one, though I have no luck with them. I was fertilizing it too much. I've stopped that, and the leaves have gotten smaller, but it's not blooming. How do I get it to bloom?
Well, make sure it has adequate light. They don't need direct sun. They don't want direct sun.
Yeah.
But make sure they get plenty of bright light. So near a window, but not in direct sun. And those two things are the important things as far as making sure they have some nutrients and plenty of light. Those two things.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right. Good luck, John.
Bye-bye.
You know, we hear from so many people who have frustrations with African violets. Is that part of the draw, do you think, Richard?
Well, and some people hardly do anything, it seems, and they have great luck. So I think the main thing is if you're patient, give them plenty of light, fertilize moderately, especially in the spring and summer, you'll be fine.
All right. Back to another lawn question from Don in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Don.
Good morning.
Hi.
Yes, this relates to the statement made earlier that, you know, if you have the money, sod is always better than seeding. But my question is, my experience has been that when sod is put down by a commercial place, they level the lawn nicely, but they don't necessarily till the soil very deep. So you tend to be laying it sometimes on very hard ground. If you have ground that has got clay or sand, I have. After 2 or 3 years, if you prepare the soil properly and get a good deep, maybe 4 inches of loose soil, my thought was you'd have a better root bed after 2 or 3 years. And
that's
is that valid
definitely
or not?
Definitely true, and that is not the right way to put in sod. I've seen sod go in hard, dry ground. I don't recommend that. Even the 1 to 2 inch tilling, I don't recommend. Exactly what you're talking about. I would prepare the sod bed as carefully as I prepare the seed bed. Till it down 4 to 6 inches, get it nice and loose, then rake it down, firm it up a little bit, and you'll have much better luck with your sod.
Right. Then, of course, you can't walk on it right away because you'll go in up to your ankles.
Water it right away, which you should do, you should water it deeply enough that the water goes down into the underlying soil. A common mistake I see is where people will take the hose out there and sprinkle a little bit on the surface. If you pull the sod back, they haven't even gotten down through the sod. You got to get it wet underneath. And you're right, about 2 weeks, you're not going to drive on it. Even walking on it might leave tracks, so you want to be careful with it there. But once it firms up and it started to root down, it'll be fine.
Okay, thank you. And I also want to thank you for helping me identify an umbrellis problem on a tree. However, I have yet to have any kind of resolution, but at least I know what it is.
Oh, was I at your place looking at that?
No. You gave me. I called in and I described it, and you told me what you thought it was, and that's what it was.
Okay. And, I've looked at a lot of those in the last couple of years.
Yeah,
Your settlement will be coming. They're just wrapping up the class action lawsuit.
No, I understand that, but I've been waiting a year and a half to get an inspection.
Oh, yeah, you'll probably wait another year, but it'll come.
Yeah, I understand. Thank you.
All right, Don, thanks a lot for your call, and you can join us at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa at iowapublicradio.org. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Duran and Nick Christians, horticulture professor at Iowa State University. We've been talking a lot about lawn care because we're approaching the best time of the year to overseed or reseed your lawn. And again, if you have questions about any of the plants in your life, you can join us. 866-780-9100. Kay is up next in Hudson. Hi, Kay.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a question about a maple tree in our yard. It's turning color already and dropping leaves, and I don't know if there's something wrong with it. The bark looks a little bad.
Okay.
Or if it's just an early fall.
No, there's something wrong there. Is it a large tree, a young tree?
Well, it was here in the house when we bought this house. We've lived here 15 years, so it's, okay, it's not a new tree.
And how much of the tree is doing that? Is it like one or two branches or the entire canopy?
I would say it's the entire canopy.
Not a good sign. Typically, when trees are having some problems, there are some very clear warning signs. And one very clear warning sign is early leaf coloration and leaf drop. So if that tree proceeds to do that, let's say over the next 2 or 3 weeks, and by early September is almost bare, I would assume that tree has died, unfortunately. So that's unfortunate. So hopefully that isn't the case. But typically they do that when they're having a major problem. As far as what it is, I really have no idea offhand what it is. But I doubt that you can do anything to save the tree. So it's basically kind of wait and see.
Oh, my goodness.
And hopefully it doesn't do that. So,
yeah, it's a beautiful tree.
So
I
think you'll know. I think you'll know by, let's say, this fall, the status of that tree, pretty much.
Yeah, it doesn't. It really doesn't look, from what you just said, it doesn't look good because it is dropping a lot of leaves already.
Okay. Well, sorry, Kay.
And the leaves don't look. They have some black on them. You know, they just don't look good. Okay. Well, thank you for your information.
All right, Kay. Thanks a lot for your call. And let's go to an email question. This is from Phyllis. Does the April pre-emergent take care of creeping Charlie in your lawn?
No, it does not. That is a perennial, and it might inhibit a little bit of its seed that's dropped, but it's not going to affect it. Creeping Charlie's what's the other name?
Ground ivy.
Ground ivy is one of the hardest weeds to kill. Post-emergent broadleaf controls, and there's many of those available on the market. The type of thing you would kill a dandelion with in a lawn is the best way to go. And my research on this has shown that the later in the fall you go, the better. I did a study 1 year where I started putting it on different plots every 2 weeks. In September, I went through October, I went through November, and into early December. And in the spring, it was my latest treatments, my late November, early December, that were the most effective against that species. So wait and hit it this fall.
All right. And let's go back to the phones. Next up, we've got Nathan in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Nathan.
Hi. Good morning.
Hi. What's your question?
Call. Yeah. I have an apple tree in my backyard, and it has never produced good apples. They seem to actually rot on the tree and then just fall off, the yellow apples, but it's never given good fruit. And I wonder if it's just the tree, the species, or if there's something that I should be doing.
Okay.
That I'm not.
Well, oftentimes the biggest threat to apples in Iowa are the insects. We have things like apple maggots, cuddling moth, a number of different insects that will attack the fruit and damage it badly. And oftentimes, if nothing is done, the damage may be so severe they're not usable, they're not edible. So usually the main thing that we have to do is spray the trees on a regular basis from blossom drop until right prior to harvest. So usually it's insects are the major problem.
That's usually visible, though, isn't it? I mean, you can tell.
Usually you'll see the fruit will be misshapen. They'll have spots on the surface. They just don't look good at all. So usually when you have insect damage, it's pretty apparent.
Yeah, that's not the case. They're great looking apples. They're very bitter, and they just never seem to fully mature, and then they just drop off the tree.
Okay. Was this a planted tree or a volunteer?
I believe it was planted. It was been in the house about 10 years, and it was here before I was. So.
Okay. Well, you can. The only thing you can do is give it good care and see what it does. And this may just be the way the tree is. It may not produce a very good quality fruit. And if that's the case, you either keep it or you replace it, possibly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a beautiful tree. I mean, it's worth having for the inconvenience, but I just didn't know.
It would be good to have an apple, wouldn't it?
Yes, yes, it would. I'm tired of cleaning them up, but it is what it is. But thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Nathan, thanks a lot for your call. And let's see if we can squeeze in one more question before the break. This is Dan from Waterloo. Hi, Dan.
I'm Dave.
Oh, hello. What's your question?
Hey, I grow celosia in the field. I'm a vendor at a farmer's market. And last year, I had a terrific problem with what I call spider mites. They would make a web on the flower, and I would repeatedly use the product called Seven, and it absolutely didn't seem to touch them.
Right. If those are spider mites, Seven does not effectively control spider mites. It does not.
That's it. What do I use?
You could use insecticidal soap. That should work.
Okay. And then does Pyrethrin work? Someone told me that.
I'm not sure. I believe it would, but definitely Seven does not. In fact, what Seven would do, Seven would tend to maybe destroy some of the natural predators, but not harm the actual spider mites, so it may actually make it worse. So I'd probably try insecticidal soap as my first option.
All right, Dave, good luck with that. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back to answer more of your questions in a moment at 866-780-9100 with me, horticulturist Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension, and Nick Christians, professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, Nick Christians, horticulture professor at Iowa State University, and Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. They're here to answer your questions at 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And here's a question from email. This is from Tim in Adel. He says, here in Dallas County, we're in a very serious dry period right now. Storms have either dissipated before they've gotten to us, split in two, and gone north and south. We have not had appreciable rain for a couple of months or more. Would your grassland expert still recommend overseeding now, or should we wait until it rains again?
Yeah, that's a good question. We're in that same circle here in central Iowa where it seems to have gone everywhere around us. We're very dry here. The answer to his question is yes. And I'm going to do some seeding at the research station. We're going to do that in mid-August because we just know from past experience that that's going to give us the best results. But we will have to give it some water to get it up.
All right. So go ahead and
use that same timing.
All right. And he has another question. I've also heard that a good method is to spread seed right before the first snow. Does that work?
I don't like that method. That's called dormant seeding. It's a practice that's done sometimes. They'll do that on football fields and let the cleats of the players work it in and stuff. My feeling on that is no. Try to get it out early enough if you can. Try to get it out before October. After that, the mortality of the rate of the seed is so high, birds eat it, and some of it germinates and dies. It's just not a good practice. In that case, I would wait for a spring seeding, which is tough to do. But there is an herbicide called Siduron that you can get that will selectively in the spring kill things like crabgrass and let things like bluegrass come up in it. That's expensive. It's difficult. I only recommend that as a fallback position. But if you do need to spring seed, I'd rather do that than a dormant seeding late in the fall.
All right. Thanks a lot for your questions. And next we'll go to Sue on the line in Pleasant Hill. Hi, Sue.
Hi. We've lost the very end of our beautiful, great, big, huge white pine, one of which shaded my house. I grew up with Lombardi poplars and love the smell. I know they're short-lived. I have two issues. One is I need to provide some shade, and I was wondering about, I discovered a tree called the columnar aspen and wondered how they felt about that. And the other thing is I have three oaks and two ash and a couple of ornamental trees, so I don't want to put in the same thing. Can I plant an aspen tree? Is that something that'll flourish here? And what about the columnar aspen to provide a fence for instead of putting in a board fence to grow a fence?
Well, as far as the aspen, sometimes they have some problems. Our climate can be difficult for them. For example, last summer would have been difficult. Extreme heat, extreme drought, they don't like that. And when they're under stress, they tend to be attacked by cankers, which basically shorten their life or destroy them. So they can have some problems. As far as some columnar trees, if that's what you're looking for, there are some columnar crab apples that you might consider possibly that are very upright. There are some columnar oaks that are on the market that might be worth a chance. There also are some rather narrow white pines that don't get as wide as some of the normal species does. So you do have some fairly columnar, narrow-type trees that might be worth looking at.
Then to replace the beautiful shade tree that we lost, what would you suggest for that?
As far as shade trees, I guess the top shade trees in my mind are things like maples, oaks.
Well, I have three oaks and two ash.
Okay.
I don't want to put all my eggs in one basket.
Do you have any lindens?
No, I don't.
I think they're very nice trees. So I would look at a linden. I would look at a honey locust. I would look at some of the more unusual things, like maybe a Kentucky coffee tree. There are a number of things that you may see. Hackberry. It's native to Iowa. A very tough tree. So.
Okay. Okay, and nothing can be really any dirtier than the year-old oak I have that gives me gifts all year long.
Well, most trees do that, actually, when you think about it.
Yeah, they really do. I wouldn't trade her. I've spent a fortune to have her cabled up and to keep her healthy. Well, thank you. I appreciate your help again. You're always very helpful. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot for your call, Sue. And let's go next to Bernard on the line in Des Moines. Hi.
Yeah. Hi. Good morning.
What's your question?
I have a lawn at our lake house, and we have some weeds. It's not a horrible problem, but I heard the experts say that the weeds will die out. And what I also wanted to do is do some overseeding this fall. So my question is about timing. Do I put some herbicide on the weeds and then seed in 2 weeks, or do I ignore the weeds? How do I handle a mild to moderate weed problem?
Okay, I need two pieces of information. Where is your lake house, and do you know which weeds we're talking about specifically?
Oh, I think most of them are dandelions, and it's in Panora.
Yes, this is the right time to seed. Should you hit it with an herbicide now? Probably not, and it depends on so many factors. Usually I see a lot of lawns like this. There's probably enough grass there that if you were just to fertilize it, and by the way, this is the right time to fertilize too. Mid-August is a good time to give it a shot of fertilizer. Do that, see how much grass comes back from that, and then hit your broadleaf weeds about 8 or 9 weeks later. The broadleaf chemicals will affect seed germination, so you don't want to do that now. But before the end of the fall, and you can put broadleaf materials on well into October, even November if we don't have snow. Do that, take out the broad leaves, and then plan a pre-emergence herbicide in the spring before the crabgrass germinates. And I think you can turn it around most likely without having to seed.
I see. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Bernard. Next, Max in Davenport. Hi, Max. Max, are you there? All right. Max is not there. Let's go to an email question. This is from Ray. We had friends from Louisiana bring us a kumquat plant in a pot, and it has fire ants in the dirt. How can we get rid of the ants without harming the plant?
A good question for Donald Lewis, I think. they should probably contact him at 515-294-1101.
All right. We will we'll respond to that email and let him know how to get in touch. Next up, let's go to Susan in Fairfield. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
Susan, yes, what's your question?
We have a very large garden. It's like almost 400 feet long, 12 feet wide, and we've planted a lot of native shrubs in it. Last year, they were just little twigs, you know, like little straight sticks, you know, a foot and a half high or so. And this year, things have taken off and gotten looking very unruly. In particular, we've got red twig dogwood, which we think is the ossier kind. And it is, like, huge. You know, most of the plants have spread out from the bottom, and it's like an upside-down umbrella almost. The way the vegetation is, they're probably, you know, maybe 4 feet in diameter, 3 feet high, 4 feet high, and it looks, it's kind of unkempt looking. And one of the plants, the growth comes up from the center, and it goes up, and then it goes down to the ground, and then it comes back up again. And so we're wondering how to handle pruning and when to prune.
Well, when you have a young shrub, sometimes when they're young, they may look a little bit lanky. They may look a little bit awkward.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you give them time, they will fill in and look quite nice on their own.
Mm-hmm.
What you can do if you wish is to go out there, let's say in March, early April, and you can do some pruning at that point. You can cut back certain branches. You can remove the entire branch if you prefer. But I wouldn't do any pruning at this point.
Okay.
And like I said, oftentimes if you're patient, they kind of do fill in on their own and look just fine.
Okay.
So.
The thing is that there's not much space between the leaves anywhere in these plants, so I'm not sure how much more they will fill in. I mean, maybe it gets very dense, because I've never grown these plants before.
Yeah, I think what they're going to do, basically, eventually, they're going to form new branches from the ground.
Mm-hmm.
They're also going to form side branches on the existing branches,
mm-hmm.
so they will fill in over time fairly nicely, I think.
All righty. And is this the case also, like, with ninebark and chokeberry?
Yeah, pretty much the same, right.
And service berry, we've got them too.
Right. Oftentimes when they're small, they kind of look rather awkward, maybe not the best-looking specimen, but as they grow and mature, they fill in typically quite nicely.
Okay. They're in this whole garden is in a very public place on campus here, and we want the thing to look as good as it can. So I guess we just need to be patient and...
And a little bit of pruning.
And a little bit of pruning in next spring, though, not now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good.
All right, Susan, thanks a lot for
your
call.
We appreciate it very much.
Bye-bye. Next up, Bill in Sac City. Hi, Bill.
Oh, hi, Charity and Nick and Richard. Thank you for taking my call. And I just heard your comments and that the optimum time to spray Creeping Charlie, and you found from your research the best time was your latest treatment in December. And I have a restored wetland and a large amount of Reed's canary grass has invaded, and I've treated with Roundup with some success. And my question is, when would be the best time to treat it? Would later in the fall be best, or when would be the optimum time, do you think?
Now, you're planning to treat with Roundup, I would assume, on that?
I am, yeah.
Yeah, okay. You want to treat it when it's actively growing and green.
Okay.
That is a perennial, and it's a really tough one to kill. I haven't done any research on that specifically, but if I had to guess, I would say a little bit later in the fall. You want it to translocate down into the base of the plant, and it'll do that best later in the year. So without doing any research on it, I'm guessing, but I'm saying hit it before it goes dormant, but later in the fall.
When will it go dormant?
That's going to depend a lot on the kind of winter we have. I would probably say we're talking about late October here.
Okay, good. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Bill. And let's get to some email questions. This is, I think it's from Walt. Here we go. I have considerable black walnut leaves and branches. I'd like to compost with my other compost, but is there a way to make the walnut less acidic or neutral, or will time and Mother Nature do that for me?
Well, the walnut debris contains juglone, which is a material that may inhibit plant growth if you have a lot of it. But on the other hand, if your compost pile is made of various materials and the walnut is only a portion of it, I don't see that being a major problem.
All right. This one is from Gavin. For 3 years in a row, my pumpkins have been killed by some sort of grub that gets in the vine and turns it to mush. Number 7 dust was recommended, but doesn't seem to have an effect. I've also changed the location of the bed to no avail.
Well, that could be the squash vine borer, and that basically bores into the base of the vine near the ground, basically on squash and pumpkin, and usually it shows up about mid-June. And if you apply an insecticide, mainly a spray, around the base of the plant at that point, that should prevent it. But dust is kind of hard to apply, and so I would probably use a liquid on that.
All right, let's go back to the phones. John, somewhere in Minnesota. Hello, John. John, oops, there. That was my problem. Hello, John.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, my question. Go ahead.
Oh, no, you go ahead.
Okay, my question is, we have a daycare, and we have just a bunch of kids in the back during the summer, and they're just killing my grass. Is there a grass that is particularly tough for foot traffic?
Where'd you say you were from again?
Well, I'm in Minnesota, but
in Minnesota,
Aberdeen,
okay.
South Dakota.
The answer to that in our area would be tall fescue, but you're just a little too far north for that. You could experiment with it. I think you'd be able to buy tall fescue in the stores there. It will take that kind of traffic better. We use it for parking lots and things like around the stadium here on campus. It's pretty tough, but it can winter kill, and you're kind of on the border. So you might experiment with it, and if it winter kills, I'd go back to bluegrass and ryegrass.
Okay. Does it take long for that grass to establish itself?
No. If you and you're at the perfect time of year for it, you want to. In fact, with tall fescue, and that's true here in Iowa too, you're better to go a little early than late because of the winter kill problem. So I would definitely say mid-August on that one. Give it some water. It will come shooting out of the ground very fast. And the thing I'm worried about is winter damage in your area, and I'm just not sure about that.
All right, John, good luck with that. And here's a question you can settle for Ken in Des Moines. Nick, he says, can you discuss a little about proper mowing height for bluegrass lawns? We have a neighbor who mows their yard several times a week, very short, about 2 inches, and waters 3 to 4 times a week. We mow at a height of 3 to 3.5 inches and only water a few times a month. I will adjust my mowing height if you recommend it.
No, I would keep his mowing height where it's at. I mow 3 to 3.25 inches on mine. Kentucky bluegrass can take 2 inches. That's about as low as you can go with it. It does look pretty good, but the lower you go, the more stress on it. The shallower the root system is going to be, the more water it's going to take. So 3 inches is a pretty good mowing height for Kentucky bluegrass.
All right. I'll bet that's been a subject of much debate in his home. All right. Nick Christians, thank you so much for joining us today. Horticulture professor at Iowa State University and turfgrass specialist Nick Christians. Richard Giron, thank you.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. We will be back with Horticulture Day again next Friday. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Sarah Bowden, Emily Woodbury, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We had technical support today from Sean McLean. You can send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Talk of Iowa is a production of IPR News.